Welcome to Pyramid to Circles. This podcast is for the leaders and the change makers who have the goal of evolving their company, their department, their team towards more collective intelligence, more empowerment, more self-organization, but who are asking themselves how to make this happen, where to start, and how to get inspiration from others. So today, my friend, I would like to connect two big topics, two topics that have been seen so far are completely separated, but are deeply interconnected. The topic of leadership and the topic of sustainability. Many corporate universities want to integrate sustainability in their leadership development programs, and they are right. And this is not optional. If we consider the result of the JEC in 2022, the window to make a change is very narrow if you want to offer to all children a planet that is somehow livable. So is it an issue only for governments? No. If we truly believe we are leaders and change makers who can make a difference, it is our duty to take our responsibility and act upon it. But how? So how to integrate sustainability in culture transformation and in leadership development in organizations? That's the topic I would like to tackle today. So I would like to briefly share with you my vision of sustainable, let's call it sustainable leadership. And then we will have our guest of the day. So very quickly, I would like to share that I believe that more than ever, we need to understand that we live in an ecosystem, that there is no separation. What we do here has an impact out there. That's the leadership we need to integrate. We need leaders who can really listen, who can not only think, but also feel the interconnections, the inner relations between every actors in order to make their ecosystem thrive. And in an organization, these actors, these stakeholders are not just our clients or the shareholders or the employees, but they are the whole society and the living system that support us, that we tend to take for granted, the water, the air, the soil, the species, all that we call life. These are also our stakeholders. So we need today a shift of leadership, and all of us as leaders and change makers, we must look at the impact we create on our ecosystems. You know, Robert Keegan would call that an integrative mindset, as a shift of maturity. We need to shift to or get more mature and be able to integrate, to build this integrative mindset. Our capacity to understand and integrate everyone's needs in our strategies, even if those needs seem very opposite. Well, is that even possible to reconcile the needs of every actor and the need of the planet? I asked this question 15 years ago to Marshall Rosenberg, the father of nonviolent communication, and he said it was his vision for our humanity. So I believe that our mission today is to build that capacity. Now, this capacity cannot just happen at an intellectual level, because the gap between what is required and what we do today is so big, so overwhelming, that it is about transforming ourselves. It's about shifting our mindset and finding a new source of hope, but also a new source of creativity and energy inside of us to reinvent our world. We could say that this shift requires a transformation program. So the good news is that such a program exists. And my guest today is a person who has dedicated the last 20 years of her life to help people make that inner shift, to reinvent themselves as actors of change for a civilization in which we can truly cooperate with the planet. That work is called The Work That Reconnects. It has been funded by an amazing woman called Joanna Macy and brought in Europe, in particularly in France, 20 years ago by my guest today, Claire Carré. Claire, welcome.
Hello. Hello, Michael. Wonderful to see you.
Yes, the same here. Where are you as we speak?
Right now, I'm in Southampton, which is on the south coast of England.
Okay.
I hover between France and England most of the time. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me introduce you very shortly and you complete me. You are an artist and a dancer. And you have a British passport, but you live, as you just said, between France and I think in England. And you brought to France The Work That Reconnects that was funded by Joanna Macy. I just said you will explain that to us. We met 10 years ago in a session that you were leading, and it had a very profound impact in my life. You made me connect to the emotions of despair I had inside of myself that I could only contemplate. And also I was you made me connect to the, you know, to this despair, to the suffering happening on the planet. But you also gave me a way to turn this despair into a very creative energy in service and reinventing myself and in order to build a better world. And I want to say I'm so grateful to you for that, because it was a moment of shift in my life. And the school of thought that we call the work that reconnects is for me an approach that reconciles leadership and sustainability. It's not about doing, it's about being first. And once you connect inside of yourself with who you are, exposed to the world in suffering, it helps you find your own leadership to take action. So just would like to ask you, is it a fair introduction to the work that reconnects? Or maybe you want to add and please complete and add and explain us.
No, Michael, that's a lovely introduction. And it's ever so true. It's ever so, the nutshell of this work is that transformation that you're talking about, which is to do with having the courage to face the despair, which is huge and which is largely in denial, you know, in our society in general at this stage, put under a few blankets of denial, and to have the courage to go through that denial and to face that despair. And then we have access to the most extraordinary well of energy and creativity, and gives us the it's empowering. So it's very, very, very tied in with leadership.
That's very interesting, because if we look at the natural reaction of people, maybe not for everyone, but the people in society in general, I see two reactions. I see the people feeling numb, like sleeping. We are. It's too hard to see, or it's too hard, or it's too difficult to really contemplate what's happening. So we tend to not look at it, and you said being in denial and a state of, we don't really know what to do. We're disempowered. So what can I do? There's nothing can do. So people try to do some. It's the gap between what, if we really go into observing and understanding what's going on and feeling it, and what we can do or think we can do, understand we can do, there is such a gap that it's very overwhelming. So we see that, or we see people in rage, or especially young people who are acting in a place of how can I say that? Maybe rage is not the right word, but they are very upset. They want to do something, and they are asking us, the elders, to they are challenging our own responsibility. So, but yes. It's not in both of cases, it's not a place of peace and inspiration. It's either anger or denial.
Yes, yes, yes. But in that anger, that anger isn't necessarily heard as anger, mm-hmm. and the denial isn't seen, that the anger is not heard as anger. And then so there's not necessarily that space to go through it and transform it, which is what we do in the work that reconnects, which is really to do with going through those emotions, not to get rid of them, but to just acknowledge them. To acknowledge them, and then having acknowledged them, they take on a very different shape in our lives, and they become a source of energy. I mean, it's actually the basis for all sorts of therapies, but the work that reconnects is not regarded as a therapy. It's like, you know, music might be therapeutic, but is not regarded as a therapy. So we've got to be careful here not to call it a therapy, but however, it does have that same process of facing the emotions, of going through them, of sharing them, of hearing them in other people. And one thing that's very, very important about the work that reconnects is that it is group work. It's not individual work. It's really to do with groups. It's because the mess we're in at the moment as a sort of dysfunctional world is a collective mess. And in the work that reconnects, we really regard that it requires a collective solution. And that's why it's so important for organizations. And earlier you were saying about how organizations could be real actors for change. If only that degree of consciousness of going through what we really are as human beings, you know, were brought to organizations, and obviously it is in many of them, but not in all of them yet. And it would be just amazing to see a world where there was that degree of consciousness in all the organizations, and then they realign themselves according to those values and that consciousness. But of course, they could be such powerful places of extraordinary change, as many of them are now. Yeah, there's a real place for the work that reconnects in organizations, that's for sure. It's collective through and through.
That's interesting, because so far the expression of the feeling about what's happening on the, for the, let's call it, for the planet and society, for the destruction, for the dysfunctionment happening, they are left at the individual level, where people are not asked in organizations to bring their feelings, emotions, or even ideas. They can bring the ideas for innovation, or they can contribute with ideas, but this stays at the intellectual level. But what you're saying, I think what you're doing, is it starts with expressing or facing these let's call it emotions in yourself. Can we just pause on that a little bit, that first space or that container that you create for people to reconnect or to connect to them?
Yes. So really, it's like going back to our deepest roots and coming back up, you know, and working back through ourselves, having gone to the depths. So we start our workshops with gratitude, and gratitude means getting in touch with our deep feeling of awe, of amazement, of beauty, of wonderment with what it is to be alive, you know, gratitude for ourselves, gratitude for each other, gratitude for breathing, gratitude for everything in our lives. It could be a smile from somebody one day. It could be gratitude for the birds that sing, you know, I mean, whatever touches us can bring us back to this feeling, which is it's not a sort of one only feeling, because if you look at gratitude and you get into it, you find that it's got a whole spectrum of emotions that are very, very healthy. It's got acceptance, it's got contentment, it's got celebration. And that's like our compost. That's the earth, the rich earth from which we're going to grow, from which we're going to take our energy and go forward into the journey. And then the journey takes us in the second stage to what we call honoring our pain for the world. So honoring our pain for the world is saying, yes, it does hurt. Yes, I am angry. Yes, I am afraid. Yes, I do feel guilty. I am in great sadness. I am in grief at everything happening in the world today. You know, no, we do not feel disconnected from a war, from a massacre, from the bees dying, the insects disappearing, from the oceans being trashed and all the fish disappearing and the plastic building up. We don't feel disconnected from those things. We actually hurt about those things. And it's to do with recognizing that pain and saying to that pain, thank you, pain. I recognize you. I hear you. I share you with others. Hearing that others share that pain with us, and then saying, okay, well, what are we going to do now? You know, although that's the next, that's part four. But before part four, we go through part three of this journey, which is called Seeing with New Eyes. And it's like, it's to do with what you mentioned earlier about, you know, going through that pain. So once we've gone through that pain, we've acknowledged it in ourselves, we've heard it in others, we've shared it, we arrive at a very different place. And in that place, which is much more peaceful and much richer and much more open to our senses are more open, our consciousness is more open, even our body is more open, then we go on to experience what it is to really be a human being. You know, it's like connecting to our ancestors, to our descendants, to other beings, to other species, to a much greater, much vaster sense of who am I? Who am I is the fruit of 13.7 or 8 or 9 billion years of an extraordinary journey, you know? And so it's like, oh, connecting with that, with our deep self coming from a very deep time place, you know, and where are we going? Where are we going with this incredible portion of the universe that is ourselves? Okay, so that sounds very cosmic, but then we go into part four where we channel that into a very, very practical a program, if you like, of okay, what changes do I need to make in my life or in my organization or, you know, in my family, or what changes do I need to make? And once we identify those, we really, really identify what is my deep desire, you know, we listen to our desire, and we really like to think that the desire of planet Earth to survive is the ally. We are the allies of planet Earth's desire to survive. So if we listen to our deep desire, somewhere we're going to hear echoes of what our existence today, you know, as this human being in this place, in this time, what we can bring to be at the service of a much better world, ecologically, socially, and in every way, for the happiness of everybody.
Thank you. It's thank you for sharing the steps. As I listen to you, I just realized that when you say it's cosmic, you go in a, the journey takes you to a level of consciousness. You go through in a journey to a place where you become conscious of not only you as a being here today in this body, but you as a part of the universe, and to something much greater that is beyond, you know, beyond ourselves. And from there, in that place, there is the energy, and there is from that place a new platform to rethink what can I do, you know, what can I do not anymore from a reaction to the sadness or to the distraction, but from a creation, a co-creator of this huge movement of the evolution of the universe that you mentioned, 13 point, I don't know how many. Million years ago, right?
That's right.
And it makes me, you know, I just make a short reflection. This is for us also, for those who like to think of, I know, articulate the transformation. If some of you may be familiar, we could do actually a podcast on that, to this tool or this model called Spiral Dynamics. it's one of those tools to understand the level of maturity and the growth, the development of an adult through different stages. Anyway, and we are moving here from a stage, or what I hear in what you're saying is the invitation to shift from, so there are different, so there is the level one is will be ego-centered, egocentric, then we're shifting to ethnocentric. So I exist in a, I see myself as existing for myself. So the child, a young child will be there. And then I exist so ethnocentric is I exist in a group, in a social context. And from there we shift to the world-centric. So I exist as a member of a greater world. So yes, I exist in an ethno, in a group, in a social group, in a country, but I'm part of a larger group, a larger world. A lot of the conversations we're having in our societies are around this shift from ethno to world-centric worldviews, right? And if we address the problems on the ethno level, we will have different level answers if you address them at the world-centric level. And issues such as the environment are for sure cannot be addressed at the ethnocentric level because they are too complex. They are happening at the world level. And then there is another level that is the cosmocentric. And this cosmocentric is that understanding it's not just I understand I'm part of the world, but I'm part of something greater and bigger that is mysterious and that is cosmic. And that's another level of maturity. And what I just understood is that in the work that Reconnect, you invite people to visit that level of consciousness, and from there they can come back down to the world-centric problem but address it differently. So that's very interesting as a journey, as a transformation journey. I just realized that as you spoke.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And what you just say there reminds me maybe to say a few words about the kind of work that it is. It really is based on going on journeys with our imagination, you know. So we have access to those planes because we play a child's game, you know, of what if, you know, go there, remember this, you know, and it's reliant on imagination, on poetry, on our bodies, our breathing. It's not addressed just to the intellect. So because we have access to all those, we're addressing all the different levels of the being, you know, the spiritual, the emotional, the physical, the mental. We take the whole being, and the exercises are aimed at all parts being you know, called upon. And because all parts are called upon, we can make those journeys, you know, because there's no part of us that's being left behind because it's body or because it's imagination or, you know, which I think is part of the problem. Certainly that's what Joanna saw when she created the work that Reconnects. She was asking that question a lot of people ask, you know, is like, why are we destroying the world and humans and everything? And we can see that we're doing it and we continue to do it. What's this dissociation? And she clearly saw that it's because the problems were just being addressed by the mental factor. And she said, well, as long as it's only that part of the human being that's looking at these problems, then we're not going to resolve anything. It can't go, it can't percolate through our emotions, through our heart, through our bodies, and it's got to, concern the whole of our being if we're going to find durable, solid answers.
So that's when you introduce. So can you just be a bit specific? What does it mean in terms of, because you have a very specific, as we all call it, pedagogy, or you have a teaching style, or so first I want to say you're a great facilitator, a great trainer, you really know what you're doing. There is a bunch of methods and exercises that are very, very well thought of, I think, in a the work that we connect, created by Joanna. Just maybe, do you want to comment on how it looks like or what happened in with the group? You explained the different steps, but in terms of how does it look like in the room the type of how does a session look like? If you sure. like say yeah, and we come to a session next week, and what may okay. happen there in there?
Okay, I just want to say for a start the importance of the circle and in your pyramid to circles is such an apt title for your whole creative project and I just want to mention that we always sit in a circle. We regard the circle quite highly, like they do in indigenous peoples' circles. You know, the circle has that absolutely ancestral quality of sharing information. That's what a circle, I mean, it's about many things. It's got many levels of symbolism, but one of them is the equality between all people, the brotherhood of the circle. So let's say for a start that we're in a circular formation in this work, not just in the shape that we're sitting, but also in the way we share the work. So typically, we'll have moments of sharing in the circle. We'll also have moments of exercises where we might walk around the room, maybe with our eyes closed, and there's a story that the participants will be hearing about evolution. They might meet somebody. They might exchange through a look, through perhaps touching their hands, perhaps. It might be lying down on the floor. It might be going out into the woods solo. Meeting a being. A tree or a squirrel or a bird or a rock or a cloud or a river, entering that peaceful space inside and asking the river, what do you want to say to me? As simple as that, listening to that peaceful space inside, to the answers that come. We're not worried about, is this your imagination? Is it shamanism? Is it this? Is it that? It doesn't worry us, It's what's important is that everyone comes back with something. You come back with a treasure from a journey like that. You come back with some insight. We're not looking to explain, the deep ins and outs of what can happen on a psychological level, but what we know is that everybody will come back with something if they follow the instructions and they go with the intention, the good intention, because everything depends on intention. Everything. It's really experiential. All the wisdom that somebody comes back with comes all from themselves. We just these exercises, these forms are ways of accessing each person's, for each person to access their own individual wisdom. We don't have any recipes for anything. We just have a space that we hold, and we don't really do much. It's just there are a few keys. Yes, there are a few things and these wonderful exercises by Joanna. It's holding that space where people will have that pathway to their own deep wisdom and trusting it. It's there. It's in every single living being.
Yes, it's called the work that reconnects, because you deeply reconnect to yourself and to yourself as not just yourself connected, yourself interconnected with the others, and you experience it in the group with the other human beings, with humanity, but also with the living system, with the earth, and with the life. That's what I experienced, and that gave me, I don't know, I would say, and I think it's the same for every participant in some ways, a new direction and more clarity in what I wanted to do in my life at the time. Okay, that's great. So I would like, you mentioned a few times Joanna Macy. Maybe we could, it could be a moment to tell us about her. I think she means a lot to you. Who is Joanna Macy?
Okay, yes, of course, Joanna. So Joanna is an extraordinary lady. Extraordinary. She's in her 90s. She lives in California. She's been teaching and facilitating the work that reconnects since the 60s. And she's an inspiration to so many, many people. She's an inspiration around the world. She's got a deep anchoring in Buddhist philosophy, in systems theory. She knows many languages very well. She's a scholar of all sorts of things. She's just absolutely extraordinary. And she's just the most loving, amazing lady, full of teaching, full of kindness. Yes, we love her dearly around the world.
So she created the work that reconnects. Maybe there are you say it's system thinking, you said or system theories and Buddhism. Could tell us a bit more what is that, what is the story of this work with her? What led her creating, how she created it, and then what she wants to achieve with that?
Well, I think she had a terrible shock at some point when she was very young, when there was a project to install an industrial thermo station that was going to create a lot of pollution in the area. And when she heard of the terrible effects it would have on people's health and also on the nature and the killing of the rivers in that area, she went knocking on the doors of her neighborhood to try and alert people to this and to set up some form of, you know, resistance to this project. And she found that people were just closing the door in her face and, you know, telling her to leave them alone. And she was completely confused. Why? This project is so destructive and people are not coming out to say stop. And that's when she really decided to understand what this dissociation was all about. And she started studying everything about it, you know, be it in psychology or sociology or philosophy or many other things that would, you know, point to it. And she realized, yes, that this was the cognitive dissonance and the thing about just addressing problems with the mental faculty, and that as long as we did not go through the emotion, you know, accept to feel our pain our anger, our sadness, our fear, as long as we did not accept to feel what it felt like, then we weren't going to be able to respond adequately. So then she developed I must say, the work that Reconnects is its newest name, but her work has known many names. It's been deep ecology workshops, it's been despair and empowerment workshops. It started for Joanna, it started out as despair and empowerment workshops following this incident, and then she made the conjunction with deep ecology, and it went so well with deep ecology that became the deep ecology workshops, and then later the work that Reconnects, so which we translated into French, le travail qui relie, pour les francophones, le travail qui relie. And so, Joanna took this work ever more deeply and creating more and more exercises, and it's become a whole universe of experiences.
I would like to ask you because you've been practicing the work with hundreds and hundreds of people now, thousands of people, I don't know, over the last 20 years plus Joanna for the last 50 years or so, 60 years. It's crazy. It's huge. It's a movement. And on one hand, you see, so you did all that. On the other hand, the situation of the planet has never been so bad, right? The reports are always more alarming, and so I'm just curious to know what gives you hope. Do you have hope, and what if so, what gives you hope?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I got into this work in 1989, and then I was doing some in England, but it was about 20 years ago that we set up Roseau Dansant, the association in France for the work. What gives me hope? It's really other humans when I see them taking care of each other or of the planet. When I see that happen, you know, be it if I see somebody helping somebody else, or if it happens directly to me, with the people I know or don't know, but you know, especially when I see people doing things for endangered species, that gives me hope. That just one incident of like, you know, you see sometimes there are vets who perform surgery on fish sometimes, you know, endangered species or not endangered. Well, mind you, they're all pretty endangered, but that cracks something open in me and gives me hope when I see other humans caring for any living being. Yeah, that gives me hope.
I think I remember when we I met Joanna Macy, about 10 years ago or so, and we asked her this question, and she said, I don't know if we're going to make it, if we're going to manage to, you know, do what it takes to keep the conditions of this life quality or this, you know, life the way it is on the planet today. She was not sure. What would she answer? So if we would ask her, because I couldn't exactly say what she said, but she was saying something like, I cannot be sure, but I have she kind of decide to act from a place where it's going to happen or it's possible. She was like consciously choosing to not be hopeful, but to be committed. Maybe you would explain that better than me, but she has a very, yeah, very special way to address that question.
Well, there are two things I want to say. One is, once I remember when we asked Joanna, you know, do you think we're going to make it? She said, no, well, I don't know if we're going to make it. We don't know. And it's just as well. You know, it's just as well. It's better that we don't know if we're going to make it. And it's the whole thing of living with uncertainty and of actually not having to know. I've no idea if we'll make it or not, but I don't feel that there's anything else that I would want to be doing with my life than acting to try and give all the chances for us to make it. And when I say us, I mean the community of living beings on Earth. I don't just mean the humans. What choice have we got? I really, really strongly feel that that's what we are called to do today. Our existence on Earth today is asking us to open our hearts, open our consciousness, and take care of the Earth. You know, it's just, to me, it's just like when you're a child, your mother looks after you, right? And if you're lucky, your father does as well. But he might be out to work. Whatever. This is a very conventional, classic view of things. But, you know, it's quite a widespread one. So yeah. When you're born, your mother looks after you. Mm. When you're a child, you get looked after by your mother. And then your mother grows old. And then you have to look after her. Now, Pachamama, Mother Earth, has, you know, given birth to us. And it's not that she's grown old, it's that she's sick. You know, we've put all our toxic waste everywhere and it's giving her a hard time. So now we're being called to look after her. I really see it like that, you know, and that we're teenagers who have to learn to be a bit more like adults regarding their mother. And, you know, if she is dying, then you don't just abandon her. You know, you don't abandon a dying person, think, oh, well, they're dying. You know, my parent is dying. I'll just let them get on with it and walk off. You're with them to the end, giving them water and giving them the medicine or whatever, giving them love. That's the biggest thing. That's what they need at that point. And if we could only get that and just start loving Earth, giving her love, then if we could do that, then we would stop trashing her. We'd all stop trashing her immediately if we could just connect to that place of love and offer it to her. And I think that's possible because it's what we're made of. It is us. That's why I think it's possible for everybody. Mm. Everybody.
In this podcast, we are looking at organizations, and there is everybody. But everybody, there are two kind of everybody. There are everybody as individuals, but there is everybody as organizations, and that's another type of living, you know, being. I don't know if you would agree with that. My conviction is that we absolutely do need organizations to create a different world and to reinvent the way we live on this planet. you know, we like we said earlier, we always need hospitals and or schools or energy systems, or, you know, we need solutions to meet our needs that individuals cannot create, but that we can create as organizations. And organizations, they apply another level of complexity because they are made of, you know, a group of people, but they also have a history. There are things that they have a culture. So they create a system that is sometimes, you know, creating outcomes that is not exactly what the people want, but they, despite their wanting, is happening anyway. It's complex. And so, just relating to what you said earlier about taking care of the earth and being there for her and inventing, not knowing this future. What is your take on that? What is your, I'm just very open question, but what would you like to say to organizations, and what would you like to, you know, to call them to do or to be different? And the people listening are leaders, and there are people who want to make a change in organizations. They are at every level, but some are very personal, some are more at the top. They are not, none of them has the solution, but they have a little, you know, hand on the all of the solutions. So they can influence, they cannot do everything. No one can really. It's that the complexity of an organization. So it's like everybody can do their share. Okay. So it's another level of complexity to address, you know, those big stake challenges that you mentioned.
Yeah.
What is your take on that?
Yeah, what I'd like to say to those people is, why don't we take a leaf out of the book of the Haudenosaunee people, right? Who are a North American Indian people, and who traditionally do not make any decisions without asking the seventh generation. And it would be like, okay, stop everything, right? And just sit and breathe. And instead of projecting ourselves into, come back to your pyramid to circles model, instead of projecting ourselves into a very short time span of productivity and, you know, time is money and fast, 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 everything's very super speedy and very efficient. Just relax for a moment and just come back to this part of yourself that is 13.7 billion years old, right? And if you are that, project yourself into that future. You know, project yourself into 300 years hence and imagine your organization in 300 years and the descendants and what would they ask you to do or not do when you want to make a decision. Just try and find that future inside yourself. And obviously they need a sustainable world to live in. And they have wisdom. And so, I mean, maybe you recognize the traces of different work that reconnects exercises in what I'm saying to you now, but we do have this process where we ask our descendants, you know, how did you find the courage to do what you're doing? But also help us to decide what to do. Help us to create the right things so that tomorrow will be healthier than today. So to answer your question, I'd say, you know, imagine seven generations down the line and what would they think of it? Whatever the problem is, whatever the question, whatever arises, Ask them, what would you do? What would you like? No, what? Sorry, what would you like us to do? What would you like us to do?
I like it because it makes the word, the very abstract word of sustainability, that is not even an inspiring word, because sustaining is not even inspiring. You want to thrive, you don't want to sustain. And it makes it very real, because this, we're talking about people down the line, as you say, in few generations, or that will, you know, live on this planet, and they will inherit, and they will, so in a way they have a say. And if they are our stakeholders, not just in the present, but in the future, that's a very interesting way. That's a very good hint. Thinking of stakeholders, you know, what is the future? What are the future generation do say about it? Not just the young people here, but those that are in 200 years from now. It's a very good way to think. That plus the shift of the growth in maturity to move from world centric to cosmos centric, maybe to find a space and peace and wisdom. Thank you, Claire. Great.
Well, thank you, Michael.
There's one question, last question I want to ask you. When we prepared, I asked what are the topics you want to touch on, and I think there are two that you didn't say anything about. One is called the Great Turning, and the other one is called Eco Conscience. Do you want to say anything about that, or are we complete? I don't know. Touched about it already.
Yeah, we have talked a little bit about the eco-conscience, because that really is to do with who am I, and the who am I stretches a long way back and goes a long way forward, and is also part of a community of living beings on Earth. So we're not just cousins with other humans, we're cousins with all of life on Earth. So eco-conscience is really to do with that sense of who am I, and making that a much broader who am I that goes beyond time and space. Mm-hmm. Wow. And
the Great Turning.
The Great Turning, well, in a nutshell, okay, because to try and summarize the Great Turning, it's like, what is it that we have to do? What is it that we have to do in order for there to be a sustainable, livable tomorrow for future generations, not just of humans, but the whole of life on Earth? And, Joanna really saw three main that you could you know, it's a frame of reference to see this, but you can put into three main pillars what we have to do. We have to do what's called holding actions, which is to preserve life on Earth. So any actions to do with making sure that water remains clean, earth remains alive, that the air we breathe remains breathable, that different species are held protected, that humans, the riches of human cultures are preserved, like, you know, languages, musics, all these things are disappearing, and the cultural treasures are disappearing. So holding actions is to do with saying, no, don't destroy them, you know. So there's a bit of protection. Yeah, it's like, again, it's like this a mother holding her child saying, no, you're not going to hurt this child, you know. Creation of new structures. So that might be a new structure from scratch, but it also might be a new way of thinking within an existing structure. New ways of conceiving, you know, education, medicine, politics, economics, everything really could do with a bit of revision, being thought with the new paradigm, right? And creation of structures. Sorry, where was I? The
you said protection, the innovation, yeah, or creation of structures. I think there is a third one.
Yes, and the third one, but they're not in chronological order. They all happen together.
Yeah.
Is a change in consciousness, a change in consciousness, and you can see how creating an alternative structure or holding actions will influence a change of consciousness, and a change of consciousness will influence those things. So everything happens together for a sustainable world, to go from basically, back to your pyramid to circles, but to go from a linear, unrealistic worldview to a circular one where no toxicity is produced and where everything regenerates itself. So to go from a world of throw away, turn this planet into a dustbin, to a world of compost, where new things can be born of the old, you know, and there's regeneration, a circular life cycle where we respect life cycle. And of course, all these efforts made in it, be they, you know, for social justice, be they for ecological justice, be they for bringing in a new consciousness with collective consciousness. And a collective consciousness, I know you're involved in that. And that is so important, because it's through that we are able to reach these things. You know, it's like the organizations can function as an organization if they share something that is conscious. And what else would that be than, you know, collective consciousness and in shared intelligence? So, which is a shift in consciousness.
We talk about collective intelligence, but we mean collective intelligence, wisdom, and consciousness. What is collective consciousness? What in a sense of you saying it for you? Is this, because I understand individual consciousness, I become more aware and conscious of what's going on around me and the impact of what I'm doing and then the impact of my actions. But collective consciousness, what do you mean?
Well, I think as you go towards this eco-consciousness it's not a separate thing from eco-consciousness. Mm-hmm. As you go towards removing your identification of who you are as a small, encapsulated, you know, I love that phrase by Alan Watts, the skin-encapsulated ego, you know, the small me of, you know, where I was born, who I am, what I do for a living, the idea we have of me, the me, and all our psychological patterns that identify what reactions we're going to have, and that we think that is me. And the more we sort of steer away from that idea of who is the me, and we start to identify with a much bigger me, which is the whole of life on Earth and since beginningless time. I think that's, you know, that's for me, that's the direction of collective consciousness. Yeah, yeah.
Thank you. Great. I'm very happy we did this. We had this conversation. We have this podcast because I just think that the work you're doing and you have been doing for so many years, this deserves a much greater audience for the quality of it, for the impact it has on one's life. And I really would like to open the door for that work in organizations, because I think organizations are more and more ready and see the need, maybe because of new generations, maybe because of the evolution of the environment of we see the need to, we need to shift. And if it's not just about, you know, you know, being led by values, it's also, if we want an organization to exist and be a, bring solutions for the world for tomorrow and invent the solutions of tomorrow, and then there is no way we cannot not do this work. We have to do this type of work. We have to really shift, find this energy, find this, maybe shift our level of consciousness, and deeply not just react but create. And today we are a lot in reaction. So we try to reduce our emissions and this and that. This is great, but we are not yet creating. So from reacting to creating, and I think that's what you're offering is the space, the container for that shift. And I wanted to, I just had the intuition that, and I still have the intuition that what you do could create so much value in organizations, that there is a lot of bridges to build and to maybe of translation, of adaptation, but still the essence of it, you shared it very clearly. And in the continuation of Joanna, what you did, and to continue this affiliation, if I can say so. And I don't know. So I hope that if people are listening to us, are inspired, first of all, they can come to you, Roseau Danson, we will put the website on the description of the podcast. And also, we'd love to have your reactions, and do not hesitate to engage with us if you believe that there is something to do around this idea. I would love to have your input if it creates any inspiration of anyone on the bringing that type of work into organizations. We'd love to hear from you and have your input. Let's do this. Let's create that. So that was the inspiration, was to create that connection between you, Claire, and the world of change makers in organizations that are about reinventing their organization to maybe an organization that is more serving life in general. And I think we are there right now. I just think of Frédéric Laloux. I think he's driven by the same, I think, the same purpose. And I think today when we think about purpose-centric organization, we mean organization that have an impact that is positive on the ecosystem. This is exactly what we mean. Just we need to do the transformation work in ourselves collectively to be able to really embrace that and act on this amazing opportunity that we have for ourselves, for the and for the future, for just to be human beings who make a difference. I think this is what we want to do. So I would like to say, first of all, a big thank you. But before we end, I want to like to ask you if it's okay to give you this 1 to 3 minutes of you alone with our audience. You may want to say some closing words. I'm going to cut my microphone, remove my headset. I don't hear what you say. So that's you alone. Are you up to that?
Yes. And I want to thank you too. So
after I come back after. Okay.
Sure.
So before we close, so I look, everyone, Claire is speaking to you directly. I cut my mic.
So hello, everybody. It's quite an extraordinary experience to imagine you out there, not seeing your faces, but kind of feeling your presences. And I just want to say that may you be happy. May you find your peace, your serenity, and find the things that give you your sense of purpose and your connection, your deep, deep, deep connection with life. So breathe in. Yeah, breathe in. And just hold that wish in your heart to connect with your purpose and with all of life on earth. And may your purpose be at the service of all of life on earth. Breathe in. Hold the wish. Breathe out. Thank you.
I'm back. Thank you, Claire. It was really, really nice to have this conversation with you. We haven't seen each other in so many years. And then that was like yesterday.
Yeah, so, it's great.
Yeah, I really hope that will have inspired some people in our audience, and then to whatever speaks to you in hearing really clear. Well, I invite you to take action and to follow that. My dear, all the best
again,
to you.
Thank you so much.
Let's see what happens.
Yeah, it's really wonderful to see you again and to have this chat. Is really, really, you know, a lovely, lovely thing to do. And you know, I'm delighted to see you and see you're doing well in your projects, and wish you well, very well.
The same to you. The same to you. And then that's it for today, everyone. All the best to you. Stay inspired and in high state to embrace all the challenges that you're working, that you're meeting, and to make a difference wherever you are. So let's keep in touch and be tuned to our next episode coming in a couple of weeks. Bye.